Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on our Midweek Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three important stories that have been crossing our news feeds in the last week or so. And in particular, we'll be looking at the latest Sivas by the Numbers report that has been long overdue since March of 2019, since we last saw an edition. It used to come out twice a year, or even quarterly, but now it's twice a year, if not once a year. We'll take a look at what those numbers mean. Again, that's real-time data we'll take a look at. We're also going to look at the University of California system and their latest enrollment statistics for the year. And we'll then also wrap up with a continuing story related to Iranian students that have been trying to enter the United States for study or re-enter the U.S. for study, even with valid visas and some of the difficulties that they're having. So I appreciate everybody for joining in. We're going to be taking a look at these issues today. And as a reminder for those of you who are new to the Midweek Roundup, each Monday, SMIE Consulting releases a newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international education news. We release that newsletter on Monday morning, 9 a.m. Free sign-up provided the link to the latest edition from this past Monday in the comments section on the Facebook page. And we take three of those stories from the Midweek Roundup and profile them here on, we take three of the stories from the newsletter and profile them here on the Midweek Roundup each Wednesday. So we're really looking forward to digging in with you to these issues. And for those of you who are listening on the podcast, thank you so much. I sincerely appreciate you subscribing to the podcast and catching this half-hour news brief each week, whether you're working out, going for a walk, or at work. I really appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say on these important issues of the day for international educators everywhere. So let's jump right in. Let's look at the latest Sivas by the Numbers report. And for those of you who aren't familiar, this is something published by DHS, Department of Homeland Security. It is the supposed real-time current information on all international students that are currently listed in Sivas, in the Student Exchange Visitor Information System. And this is where all universities are inputting their data, all high schools, colleges, universities that enroll international students on FM and J visas are entering their information for for the international students that are coming to their campuses or already on their campuses. Now, this data is different from the Open Doors data that IIE releases every November. Again, the IIE Open Doors data is year-old data from the previous academic year. So the data that came out in November is from the 2018-19 academic year. That is self-reported by institutions around the country to IIE, and that information is compiled and evaluated and put together for the Open Doors report. Now, as we saw in November when Open Doors came out, the total number of international students in the U.S. had ticked up fractionally over 2017-18. So there was still that somewhat bright light, but for the third year in a row, there was a decline in the new international student numbers. Now, the Sivas by the Numbers reports that DHS puts out does not go into provide a breakdown necessarily on new students versus returning students. So that is something that is very different. So that is something that we, when you look at the numbers, you have to take that into consideration. It's looking at the totality of the numbers. But unlike Open Doors, there is a fair bit more data that can be manipulated and parsed out to get to top source countries by study level, and other factors that you can look at that will do make it a fairly valuable resource, in my opinion. But it takes a fair amount of work to get through it all. So when you see, if you have been to the site before, and I've put the link to the January 2020 report, it's actually just a data mapping tool. There's also a geographic version where that can give you country-level data in aggregate, not broken out by male-female level of study, states that they go to. And that's something that's is important for institutions and those that are looking to kind of get a sense on where the numbers are. I've been keeping a running track of these reports coming out since July of 2018. So I've condensed some of the data over the last three or four times that this these reports have been released, and have some interesting findings that I'm sharing with you today. I put out a new blog post yesterday that outlines that outlines what's going on here with international student numbers in the United States, the real-time data. And I'm putting a link to the blog that I just released yesterday on the Status by the Numbers January 2020 report. What this contains, the blog post is on our SMIE consulting site. It really contains some insights into the data and some pictorial displays of what we're talking about here and the differences between Open Doors and the Status by the Numbers reports, as well as country level data that is useful by study level, and also the overall picture for the different levels of study in where the numbers are going. So what do the numbers show us? When you look at the Open Doors data from the November report that came out in 2019, they always do a top places of origin of international students, a top 25, and then when they release the full version of the reports with all the data tables in paperback in the spring, you would get the full 180, 200 countries that are listed. But what this does show is that the countries themselves, between the Open Doors report and the January 2020 current Status by the Numbers details, you find the top four are in the same order. You find that China, India, South Korea, and Saudi Arabia are in the top four places. But you see in the numbers here also that there are these numbers are, they're not exactly apples and apples. They are, in terms of the time that they're released, as we talked about, the IIE data is from the previous academic year that was released in November. The Status numbers are current. But the Status numbers also include students that come to the United States for primary and secondary school, and also for vocational flight training, that type of thing. So those are very small numbers in comparison to the million plus that are still in the mix. But the Status by the Numbers report for January, their top 25 list does include one country that's not in the IIE Open Doors report, and that's Thailand. Thailand has dropped out of the top 25 in the Open Doors numbers, but Thailand is actually at number 21 on the top 25 countries, with over 8,700 international students currently in the United States. So there are, again, some subtle differences, and the order after number four is very different depending on the country, where they fall on the Open Doors numbers report versus the Status by the Numbers. What you do see is there are significant drops in the top five from India and Saudi Arabia. India is almost at a 7% drop. And if you remember, the Open Doors numbers in November revealed that there were 202,000 international students or students from India in that report. With this current Status by the Numbers report, there are only 194,000. So that's a drop of 8,000 that you're likely to see in at least that in the next year's Open Doors report. Again, this is about the time that institutions are filling out their Status number or their IIE Open Doors reports for IIE to compile the data for next year. They're filling those out in the springtime, spring semester, and this kind of a number here, 194,000, is going to be closer to what the IIE numbers will be that you'll see next November. We do see Bangladesh has surprised, not surprisingly, but they've dropped over 6% as well. All the other ones that have dropped, and you do see on this report, you see a total of nine countries, nine out of 25 on the current Status by the Numbers reports actually showing increases. And those are Vietnam continuing strong, about 2.5% growth. Canada, 5.5% growth. Taiwan, 1.2%. Nigeria, 0.81%. Ironically, they've just been hit with the travel ban, but again, students are exempt from that travel ban. But that hasn't necessarily been a saving grace for all travel ban countries. Iran has seen a drop off of 3% in the last since March 2019. They've seen a 3% drop in their student numbers, and it's actually 2,000 less than what you see in the Open Doors report for 2018-19. So we're seeing Iran's numbers going in the wrong direction. We'll see more about that in our third story of the day. But you also do see increases from France, Kuwait, Indonesia, and Pakistan. Kuwait, Indonesia, Pakistan round out the top 25, and each of them posted between 1.3% and 2.4% growth in the past 10 months on Cvis by the numbers. So that's the little bit of bright lights in this evaluation of what's going on. Hussein, thanks for joining. Hope you're well. Hope you're keeping things on the up and up over north of the border there. Good to have you on as always. So in addition to those bright spots that I mentioned there are very few bright spots in this report. But when you look at the overall international students by study level, you do find drops in the overall numbers. The overall numbers are down 2% from March of 2019 in the Cvis by the Numbers report. So you can certainly expect Open Doors numbers in November to reflect that decrease. You see a 12% drop in associate degree students coming or attending currently, but you do see a point, a very small increase, a 0.11% increase in the number of bachelor's degree candidates in the US. Master's degree candidates are down a little over 3%. PhD candidates are up to over 5% growth in the last 10 months, but still continuing drops in ESL down 7.7%. And high school, for the first time in a while, actually has saw a decrease of approximately 5,000 students in the last 10 months. So a drop of a little under 10%. So we're seeing some movement there. And certainly, when you look at all the different levels of study, I've put together a chart in the blog post that I've listed for everybody here. In the comments section on the Facebook page at smieconsulting.org. If you go to the blog link, this will be the latest blog article there. It has the six levels of study from doctoral, master's, bachelor's, associates, high school, and ESL broken down into the top 25 countries in each of those levels. China is leading in four of the six categories, and it's second in the other two. The two where it is not leading as the number one source is India, where that has the lead in master's degree students, and Brazil takes the top spot for ESL. So happy to share those data tables that I put together from this current report with anyone who's interested. So please do let me know, and I'll be happy to get those out to you. Lerka, how are you? Good to see you on. Hope all is well. We're in sharing the Cvis by the Numbers report data, my analysis of it. Certainly want to make sure my colleagues on the higher ed side have the current and most up-to-date information, and hopefully that will be information will be helpful to you as you plan a future strategy. Certainly one of my clients that I'm working with now on the university side, this is going to be some of the data that's going to be very important for them to see and evaluate as they're developing their primary, secondary, and tertiary markets that they're going to be going after in the coming years as they seek to put together an enrollment management strategy to reach out to international students abroad and boost their numbers. So that's it for the first topic, and that's a very meaty one, and there's a lot of data in there to go into. This is just kind of the high-level stuff, but certainly happy to have the conversations with anyone who has desire to go a little bit deeper into those data tables and see what might be an important distinction that your institution will need to be aware of. Now, next up is the University of California system. We've just heard in the last week that the UC Regents have decided to not do away with SAT and ACT and become test optional for its domestic students. That policy is going to remain in place, at least for the time being. So we'll see where that goes. But this past week, they did release their annual fall enrollment at a glance for the UC system. And it details all levels of study. And there's a sortable database here that you can break it down by all through academic level, through program, through source of support, through enrollment status, whether new and continuing. So when you look at some of the data that's available here for the UC system, it certainly paints the picture for those that are unaware of what's of the UC system and their data. It's obviously huge. But when you look at what the data does show is when you look at international students in particular, obviously that's why we're here and talking about it, you look at within the UC system, there are currently, if I want to get the exact number for you, of international students, we have, I think the last data point that I saw was that there were over 46,000 international students currently in studying at California institutions. So put the link to the searchable data table here that is will give you a real important, a real deep dive into the data that they have here. International students now represent 16% of all students currently enrolled in UC system schools. And if I'm remembering my math correctly, we're looking at well over 50%. I think it's 57% of the international students currently enrolled of the 41,000 international students that are currently enrolled in the UC schools, 26,912 were from China. So we've seen how the U.S. as a whole is very reliant on China. We all know about that when it comes to lots of different things that affect the U.S. economy, including trade. But with regard to international education, Chinese students and parents spend an inordinately large amount of money here in the United States. Fully basically a third of our international students currently in the United States are from China, and the dollars that means for the institutions that enroll them, the communities where they study is it cannot be ignored. And certainly 33% of all international students are coming from China. In the UC system, that is even a more dramatic number, with over 57% of international students in California schools are from China. The next largest, so you go from about 27,000 Chinese students, the next largest group is from India at about 4,000, South Korea at just over 2,000, Taiwan in fourth place at just under 1,500. So we see significant drop-offs after that. Saudi Arabia isn't even in the top 15 here. So we're looking at some very dramatic numbers here in California schools that have become hyper-dependent on China as a source of international students on their campuses. And be interested to see, as some of the numbers from China tend to take a dip, and for the Cevis by the numbers report that we just highlighted, we did see an overall drop in the number of Chinese students. That's not reflected in the Open Doors report. There was still an increase overall, but for Chinese students as of January 2020, real-time data, there is a drop over March 2019 in total number of Chinese students. So the peak has come and gone, it looks like, for the top levels of international student flows from China, at least for the time being. So we'll see where that goes with when it comes to the University of California, and if there are significant drop-offs that affect UC system, affect Chinese interest in the United States. Certainly, schools like the UC system are going to be increasingly affected by any substantial drop-offs. So we've talked in the past about the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where their engineering and business colleges have taken out insurance policies against drops of revenue coming from China into their colleges. So that's significant. And don't know if that's happening in California UC systems schools yet, but certainly if they're smart and hedging their bets at all, they're going to want to make sure that they're taking appropriate precautions to make sure that they are well placed to weather the storm. And certainly, if a storm does come when it comes to China, UC systems are going to be system schools are going to be in heap lot of trouble when it comes to that. So we'll see what happens there. We'll certainly keep our eye on it here on the Midweek Roundup. Now, last story. We've touched on this the last couple of weeks as there have been increasingly stories in the news, obviously, with the issues going on between the U.S. and Iran. There was the flare-up, obviously, when Soleimani was killed, the Iranian general of their Revolutionary Guard troops, and that has led to other high-profile or I shouldn't say high-profile individuals, but certainly high-profile in terms of the media coverage that you're seeing. And in the news, the midweek, excuse me, the newsletter we released on Monday, we had a series of about five stories talking about different Iranian students from major media outlets. And I'll be sharing three of them here with you today from CNN, from the Wall Street Journal, and from the New York Times that have all included stories about how Iranian students are being really getting undue, well, certainly extra scrutiny in the wake of all the back and forth going on politically between and militarily between the U.S. and Iran. Should there be any surprise with that? Probably not. But the level of student denials and deportations that have happened related to Iranian students is really remarkable in terms of the numbers. And I've already shared the latest Sivas by the Numbers report showing a 2,000 student drop in the last 10 months from Iran. Even though, again, this is even though Iranian student visa applicants are not subject to the same travel ban that has been is now part of 14 different countries that fall under the Trump travel bans. The student there are student exemptions and all, but I think one of those cases, and that's North Korea. But we look at what's happening with the Iranian students. We see that though they're not subject to the travel ban, you see students now having to go through months and months of visa wait times that have not been seen since the immediate post 9/11 days in terms of the administrative processing time. That's the euphemism for you're going to be delayed for a while until we've run you through every known database on the planet that might have anything to do with terrorism and other unseemly types, criminal types that might be have anything but honorable intent for their wish to come to the United States. So, though that administrative screening process has taken anywhere from 3 months to a year in some students' cases, and it's just amazing that these students have been willing to commit as much of their lives to this process. The greater majority are coming for doctoral programs, if not, and some lesser at master's level, really not coming at the undergrad level, at least as far as we know. But you are seeing a number of them being turned away. And we're seeing this happen. We profiled some stories at the beginning of the school year where there were Iranian students coming to the UC schools that were deported upon return or were not even allowed to get onto their connecting flights to the United States. They were stopped by Homeland Security officials at the airport in the countries that they were connecting from to get to the United States with little or no in any intent there. These are students that have just waited between 3 months and a year to get their visas, where they've gone through this exhaustive visa processing screening process to make sure that They're all legitimate. They're on the up and up. They're all the other pieces of their life have been assessed. Social media has been taken into account. All of these things that have been put in place recently to address these issues. I put the links to each of these stories, but the CNN story really paints the bigger picture here that I think represents what we all kind of need to be paying attention to here. There's also a Wall Street Journal story that focuses on the Iranian travelers drawing increased scrutiny. But perhaps the story that I think is the most disheartening is the Times report, the New York Times story, that has individual accounts where New York Times reporters have gotten interviews with a number of these students that have been deported since they returned to Iran. And they're really, it's hard not to get disheartened when you read this story, but when the Times piece also looks at, in particular, obviously the treatment of these students, and they focus on Boston, U.S. CBP officers there that have kind of been highlighted in a number of stories that Boston has kind of been the epicenter. You might remember in the fall there was also that Harvard student that was coming on a Hope Foundation scholarship to Harvard from Palestine, but it was from Lebanon, or was coming direct from Lebanon, and he was turned around and deported, and then was readmitted finally once the political heavyweights got involved and said this kid should have been let in. There was no reason to deny him based on some social media posts that a friend of his posted that were anti-American. But what CBP in Boston certainly has a really bad reputation now in international ed circles, and certainly is one that is highlighted in all of these news stories. It's not the only place where the Iranians have been turned away. They've been turned away in L.A., in Detroit, and other airports as well. But and the CNN story actually profiles a student turned away that was going to Michigan State recently. And you also have students coming back across the border that have started their studies already earlier last year and were returning and were coming back in from Canada where they had been attending a conference that they were turned away. So there's some real, real challenges here. And yeah, the whole, when I go back to it, yes, the State Department issues the visa. CBP is the one that actually is the last, Customs Border Patrol, the last officials that have the final say in whether to admit people. But what they've done here is, brings it down to the individual officer's opinion on whether or not, if they think anything's fishy or not. And they're on hyper alert for whatever reason. What the agency says, they obviously don't, they never comment on individual cases, but they do. There are, in addition to the visa grounds, there are other potential, in the statement, and according to the Times report, the agency released a statement that there were numerous potential grounds for inadmissibility, including health issues, criminality, security concerns. In all cases, the applicant bears the burden of proof of admissibility. So they have to prove that they deserve to be let in. Criminality, security concerns, since criminality is less so because those would have come up. Security concerns you would think would have come up, but that seems to be the one where that you can see these Iranian students potentially getting into being automatically blacklisted in a number of cases. But it's certainly not going to be health issues unless they've been to certain parts of the world where there might be certain epidemics going on. But you look at what's happening here. All of these students that were deported, Iranian students that were deported, and the Times story does a great job in showing this this data. They all are getting their visas revoked, which is that's one issue. But they're also getting a 5-year inadmissibility label thrown on. So they're not able to come back into the United States for 5 years to apply for readmission. And with this on their books, even though everything's going to be adjudicated separately and without prejudice and all that, these students, basically, their dream is over. Many of them, and the Times story certainly portrays this, they are going back with nothing. They gave up everything, jobs and family and costs of just getting through this process to come to to the United States, and they being sent home after going through all this security, all this vetting, 3 months to 12 months of vetting and security clearances. They get here, and an individual CBP officer can get a bug up their butt about something and then can automatically deny them entry. And then insult to injury, throw them out for 5 years. And that's just unforgivable as far as I'm concerned. And even the cases that we profiled a couple weeks ago with a Northeastern student, that they had a court order to stay their deportation, yet DHS sent them home packing anyway. And that's just incredibly frustrating. And it can really question what's going on, if you aren't already, questioning some of the policies that this administration's put into place that are being put into practice by immigration officials around the country. When it comes to international education, some of this is just beyond the pale. I'll say it. There's limits to everything, and this is clearly beyond that. It's a sad way to end this version of the roundup, but certainly one that hopefully stirs the passions in you if you're in the field and have any real intent of staying in the field, understanding what's going on in the world and being able to fight for your students. And I know all of you are passionate people about what you do. And if you're listening to this and watching this podcast, you're doing the same. You're thinking, what can I do? Get in front of your president, get in front of your representatives in Congress, your senators, your House of Representatives reps, and plead your case. Get involved in advocacy days, whether it's NAFSA or NACAC or any of these kind of opportunities you have to write your congressman. They make it so easy to do. They have templates already made up for you to address these issues, and you can get your name and your message in front of your elected officials and your institutional officials, because they can help you fight your fight if they're willing. And that's not always the case, I know. But certainly something that I would feel better knowing that I had my institution support and I did all I could to get my perceptions on how these students are being treated in front of our elected officials too, and how they should be treated. And that's something that I think more of us need to be taking the opportunity to do. And with that, I'll say goodbye for this week and looking forward to future conversations with you on this and many other issues. Have a great day.